Blog Talk Radio.
You are about to be entertained by the eighth, the young man who has become a legend in his own time.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
It's the Ron Kelly Show.
So don't get it twisted.
Welcome, Mr. Ron Kelly Show, and it's on blogtalkradio.com, the Ron Kelly Show.com. Oh, I love that little piece in the opener there with Jack Nicholson and A Few Good Men, where he tells the other actor, I forget his name right now, Tom Cruise, you can't handle the truth. I love that little piece, and a lot of people can't handle the truth, including the Roy Moore voters. They can't handle the truth either. So everybody, welcome to the Ron Kelly Show. It's on blogtalkradio.com, the Ron Kelly Show.com. Welcome back, everybody. Back in better than ever. It's the Ron Kelly Show. And, we just want to thank everybody, the people who've been listening to the Ron Kelly Show, and the new listeners who, have embraced the show. And the indicators are all up, especially in the most important category, which is how long people actually listen to the program. And everything is in the green. So we want to thank everybody, for listening to the Ron Kelly Show. And I get, we have to give this brother his due. He's veteran Newark activist and talk radio host Osman Shabazz. Greetings, brother. How are you tonight?
I'm doing fine, Ron. And yourself?
I'm doing well. Doing very, very well. Okay, everybody. Osman is here. There's Real Talk Live with Ron and Osman. Osman and Ron, however we want to do it, is going to be premiering pretty soon. So just I'll keep you posted. Stay up with me on Facebook. It's the Ron Kelly Show. On Twitter, it's R. Kelly Radio. And on Instagram, it's Real R. Kelly 1. And I'm not trying to be the other guy. I am who I am. All right, everybody. Welcome to the program. Lots going on, brother Osman. It's just so ridiculous with this, with the sex scandals. And I talked about it on Facebook. And thank you to the people who commented on Facebook. I posted earlier about the sex scandals, Osman, and now we, brother Tavis Smiley, of all people. I'm like, come on, give me a break.
You break in what sense? Tavis Smiley is above sexual harassment or rape?
No, it's just, it's some of the places where some of these allegations come from, you just kind of, and I'm not saying that Tavis Smiley is not human. Of course he is. But, I don't know. You just shake your head at the lives that are being destroyed. And I put it up on Facebook earlier about, some of these that might not be true. I think that, I have to believe that not everyone, and first of all, let me just say that I do, my heart goes out to the, and I'm in full support of the women who really have actually been assaulted and accosted in the hallway and had their unmentionables touched by somebody they didn't want to touch them. So I'm down with that. I'm fully in support of that. But I just have to believe, Osman, that, I just question the validity of every single last one of these allegations.
As a man with three daughters, as a man with a wife, as a man that know that there are a lot of vulnerable women, and that sexual harassment and sexual things take place at the workplace, I'm more inclined to say, let's do the research, let's find out what's going on, hear both sides, and then make a decision on who could be innocent or guilty. But just because a guy is a famous black announcer and he did the State of the Union and all of this other stuff doesn't mean that he has not used his power, his notoriety, to basically push himself on women in an unwanted, sexually harassing way. So, and that's one of the reasons why a lot of women don't come forward, is because they hear, especially those who are victims of famous people, like a Russell Simmons or a Tavis Smalley or a Matt Lauer or a Harvey Weinstein, for that instance, is because of this. It's because people don't believe them. People want to shame them. People want to doubt them and ascribe ulterior motives with not a shred of evidence. So you and I are basically interpreting this differently. I'm inclined to believe that Tavis Smalley is capable of it. Russell Simmons, Matt Lauer, Harvey Weinstein, Charlie Rose. I'm inclined to believe that all men in powerful positions are capable of using that, you know, that stage and that platform that they have to try to get, you know, women in bed, and even those who don't want to get in bed, to basically intimidate them and let them know that I have the power and I have the strings over your future career.
Well, you know, and I'm a mother, and I have three sisters myself, and I've had a wife or two. So I know. So, and what you're basically saying, Osmond, is people like me who, you know, the women are afraid to come out because of people like me who may kind of, you know, I can't say who's lying and who's not. But I just have to see, these are powerful people, you know, these are very powerful people. And before I go any further, I just want to let everybody know that we will be talking about this with the sex scandals, and we'll be talking about that. We'll also be talking about Roy Moore and how the black vote made the difference. Nobody wants to say it, but it was the black vote and black women in particular, from what I'm hearing, made the difference in the Roy Moore vote. And a little bit later on in the program, Osmond, we'll be talking about the Democrats. And, you know, black folks have supported the Democrats for years. They have basically just counted us in when they do their polling and their tallying about who they think is going to vote for them. They've just included us in. But what have we gotten for it? You know, so what have you done for me lately? We'll be talking about that in the Democrats. And do they really deserve our, what has amounted basically to blind loyalty? We'll be talking about that in a little while as well, right here on the Ron Kelly Show with Osmond Shabazz. Okay, and somebody's trying to call me. And I hate when people try to call me when I'm on the radio. Oh, I didn't know. But anyway, so Osmond, you know, again, I don't think that Tavis Smalley is exempt for anything, any of this stuff. But it almost seems like the male genitals is like the next dangerous weapon. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, like we regulate uranium and plutonium and all these other things, and sarin gas and all this other stuff. It seems like the male genitals is the next dangerous thing that needs to be regulated, because this has like really gotten out of hand. You know, the casting couch has been, and I'm not an advocate of all, any of this, but the casting couch has been a part of Hollywood and the corporate world, you know, for a long time. I mean, even back in the feather dancing days, the women were propositioned by powerful men. And I'm not saying that they were right to do it, but that's been going on for a long time. So, but why? I heard you say that women, they're afraid to come out, but I just think that maybe they should have came out a little bit earlier. I mean, whenever it happened, you come out right away. Why wait so long?
Because the time they might have been afraid, intimidated. They were probably working for him. And what it's saying, basically, that that Tavis Smiley, for instance, has sexual relationships with multiple staff members, not just one, multiple. And a lot of the women said that they felt that their relationship with him was connected to their employment status. And that's the problem you have. Now, if it was one person he was interested in and they went on a date, something like that, and he really cared about her, and then let's say it didn't work out and then he just left alone. But when you start banging multiple women, staff members under you, who you have the power to hire and fire, who you have the power to promote, who you have the power to raise or decrease their salaries even, then that becomes a problem. That's why they always say, don't shit where you eat. And so it could be a number of things. It doesn't mean that every single one of them were right, or it could be revenge, or it could be that this man is just used his power in order to have sex with multiple women who worked under him because he was the boss. And that's why most smart corporate men, most smart people that are the boss, do not mess with the staff, because you are in a power position. And, you know, a lot of times some women will just go along with it just because they're afraid of you. You have the power. So I'm inclined to believe, especially when there's multiple women charging you. There's multiple women saying it about Bill Cosby. There were multiple women saying it about Charlie Rose. Multiple women about Harvey Weinstein. If one of them were right, then he's guilty. And my belief is more than one was right. And a lot of women, you know, there are variety of reasons. I've had women on, you know, who ran rape centers and things like that, and, you know, that's in that line of work. I've had them on my radio show in the past. And one of the things she said that I never forget, she said, you would be surprised. And she was talking about NORC at the time. She said, you would be surprised at how many people, because she's an advocate and everything, and a lot of women come to her. She said, you would be surprised how many people I see on a daily basis, prominent people, that have been involved with raping and sexually harassing women. And that always stuck into my mind. And she's out and about, and she says she sees them all the time, those who the victims have revealed. And it's a shame. It's shaming. Women feel bad about it. They feel bad about that, and they don't want to come out because of men and certain men in the media. It's different now, though. But, you know, there's a lot of reasons that men can never understand why women hold on for years talking about sexual harassment and even worse, you know, rape. Because of the shame, the powerlessness, and who wants their name out there as, you know, the victim, person that's been raped, and then you got to meet a new husband, and he has to deal with that. There's a lot of reasons why women, as a matter of fact, the statistics say that half the women in America have been raped. Half. So as you're walking through the day, half of the women that you're looking at on the streets, at your job, everywhere, has been raped.
I just think it's a little...
Because they probably never said anything.
Well, what happened with Tavis Smiley, Walmart and this book distributor, Walmart was a sponsor of Tavis Smiley's talk show. And it's funny, you know, how everybody just dashes off, like, oh, you know, run for the hills. And this is the problem that I have with this. You know, if you're guilty, okay, you're guilty. But I still think that people should be proven innocent, innocence before guilt. And what's been happening
right.
is people have been running for the hills. Like Walmart was a sponsor of Tavis Smiley's show, and they headed for the hills. They took off, and so now he doesn't have a show, actually. You know, and see, I just have a problem with the rush to judgment that's taking place a lot of times with this stuff, there's a rush to judgment. There's a rush to judgment. As soon as the allegations come out, everybody starts heading for the hills, cut the show. I mean, look how fast they let go of, look how fast they let go of Charlie Rose, for example, who you mentioned a little bit earlier. As soon as this happens, he's out the door. these investigations, they're saying they're having these investigations. Now, who's doing investigating? What is the evidence that they came up with? Because some of these people who've been, have been accused by these women are saying that they haven't even been told what the evidence was or nothing like that. Now, I'm fairly certain that there are a good number of these men who have actually done things with these women. But I just have to believe that not every single one of them is guilty. I just don't believe that. I think that,
Name one who you think is not guilty based upon the evidence. Name one.
Well, here's the thing. Here's the thing. And it's just like child support. Child support is used as a weapon. Some women use child support as a weapon. I've been victimized by it. There's some women who use child support as a weapon. If they don't marry you, or if you don't marry them, for example, they go running down to the courthouse. And there may have been some of these men, and I'm not saying that they're right. I'm not advocating for anybody who molests a woman. But some of these men may have said, well, look, you get into a relationship with these women and then you start telling them lies, start telling them things just to keep them quiet. And, there may have been some of the men, as I mentioned this morning on Facebook, some of the men may have said, well, I'm going to leave my wife or whatever. And the woman is sitting there waiting. And, and nothing happens. So he finally tells her he's not going to leave his wife. And then, boom, guess what? Now he's a molester. Now he's a victimizer.
But none of the men that's been charged has said what you just said. None of them, not a single one.
Well, what do you mean they haven't said what I just said?
They denied their allegations, but none of them said, I was in a relationship and I told her that I was going to leave my wife, but I didn't, and this is why the charges are. None of them have said that. You're the only one that said that.
They all have lawyers, and the lawyers are probably telling them not to do it. The lawyers are probably telling them what to say.
So why are you speculating like that?
Me?
Yeah.
Because I can. basically,
I can. I'm saying it has no grounds and facts or merit if you can't point to one person as lodged that defense.
Now, see, but an opinion, Brother Osman, an opinion doesn't have to have, any legs. It's just an opinion. You look on social media and people spout off about stuff all the time. And they have nothing to back up what they're saying. I mean, I don't have nothing to back up what I say. It's my opinion, because that's what I do as a radio personality. That's what I do. I sell my opinion. I tell my opinion. And some people agree with me, some don't.
Well, like I said, I try to stick to, the facts in this case. And the PBS company, they made a decision after they did an investigation into Smiley's behavior, and they said that they uncovered multiple credible allegations of conduct that is inconsistent with the values and standards of PBS. If he fights back, you got to prove that the allegations weren't true.
Telling a woman, you can't even say, I would suggest to anybody who works in the office, don't even say good morning, don't say nothing. Just walk past them and be considered an a-hole, and just walk past them and don't say nothing. What we'll do is, all right, everybody, we're going to talk about Roy Moore, and we're also going to talk, we got a whole lot going on today. Plus, we are going to talk about the Democratic Party. And, before we go, let me just, I came to live, I moved to Patterson in 1995, late 1995. I moved to Patterson, New Jersey. I don't live there anymore. I live in Montclair. But I just wanted people in Patterson, New Jersey, and there's local elections going on all over the place. I'm sure they're going on in Newark, too, Osmond. We'll get to that because you know a lot more about Newark than I do. But what has changed? 1996, it's 21 years ago. When I came to Patterson 21 years ago, the Congressman Pascrell was the mayor of Patterson, and then a succession of others, Marty Barnes and then Joey Torres and Jeff Jones for a brief 5 minutes. And then Joey Torres again, who is in prison now. So what has changed? What has changed in the city of Patterson? You have council, you've had multiplicity of council people coming in and promising change, and nothing has, as far as I can see in Patterson, nothing has changed. So does that, because I know we have a Patterson audience, because we are right now on Facebook. So what has changed? What has changed? A succession of people doing the cha-cha line, coming in and saying what they're going to do or pointing out what's wrong, but don't have a clue as to how to fix it. So,
right.
We'll talk about that. We'll take a break. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll talk about that and a whole lot more. This is the Ron Kelly Show featuring Osman Shabazz, and it's on blogtalkradio.com. It's the Ron Kelly Show.com.
The views expressed in this commentary are not necessarily those of the Ron Kelly Show or R. Kelly Media LLC. We'll be back with more of the Ron Kelly Show after this.
Some statistics are surprising. Some are unbelievable. And some are simply unacceptable. Right now, nearly 30% of U.S. students aren't finishing high school. Nearly 30%. And that's the average. In many places, it's even higher than that. And fixing it is a responsibility that we all share. This is President Obama, and I urge everyone, not just parents, but friends and neighbors and family members, to take responsibility for encouraging the high school students in your communities, to support them, challenge them, push them a little, and do whatever it takes to help them make it through. Because this is one statistic we simply can't afford to ignore.
You can do your part by going to boostup.org and sending an email, a text message, or even a wake-up call to a student at risk of dropping out. Go to boostup.org and provide the boost that's needed to make it to graduation. A message from the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
Your bathroom break is over.
Here we go!
Welcome back.
Welcome. Really?
Now I can do what I planned to do this morning.
To the Ron Kelly Show. And on the web, theronkellyshow.com.
All right, everybody, we're back. It's the Ron Kelly Show, and it's on blogtalkradio.com. Shout out to my boy. I believe you know, I don't know what kind of relationship you got with him, Osman, but my boy, brother Abdul Muhammad. I mean, I just had Abdul Muhammad CD on my workstation here. Abdul Muhammad, here's your CD, brother. Good friend of mine who I just Facebook friended just the other day, sent me a Facebook friend, brother Abdul Muhammad. Does a lot of good work over there in the city of Newark, and has been a friend of the Ron Kelly Show for many, many years. This portion of the Ron Kelly Show is brought to you by Media Graphics. Go to MediaGraphics.net. That's MediaGraphics.net. This is the company I've worked for. As a matter of fact, this thing behind me, this backdrop behind me was made by Media Graphics. They do smart posters, smart banners, and video and digital displays. Give them a call, 973-777-2202. That's 973-777-2202. Or go to their website. It's www.mediagraphics.net. Shout out to my homie, my radio brethren. I'm not sure what he's doing right now. Lamont Gates, the unflappable one, I used to call him. Shout out to him who peeked in on me for a second. Lamont Gates, the religious scholar, I like to call him. Shout out to him and everybody else who's listening to the Ron Kelly Show on blogtalkradio.com, and those who are checking me out on Facebook Live. And I need to let you guys know that Osman's local show is going to debut on Blog Talk, I believe. What's it called, Osman, and when is it going to premiere?
I'm keeping that a guarded secret, the name of the show. But it's going to be mid-January 2018.
All right.
So
maybe that was
look forward to that. I've been working on it. I already got my my first guest who's going to be on, and I'm keeping that a secret as well. So, but it's going to be interesting. It's going to be very high-powered, very intellectual, pertinent information. The truth with no chaser. That's my line. And that's what this new radio show is going to be.
All right, good. Well, you know what? Osman will tell you, you know, because that was a blown drop. that was a blown boost. I didn't know you were going to keep everything secret. But anyway, you know, look for Osmond, you know.
Yeah, because people steal your ideals, brother. People steal your ideas. I've had that happen before. So everything gets registered and everything like that, then I'll reveal it. That's the only reason why.
You know, you do your thing. You know, it's Osmond Spies. Who knows what the name is, when it's going to premiere, or who's going to be on it. Nobody knows. So I guess that's, you know, like Al Capone's vault. Hopefully we don't go in there. Hopefully we don't open the door to that show and there's nothing there. All right, everybody, it's just a couple, 25 minutes, I guess, or so past the hour. It's the Ron Kelly Show. And it's on blogtalkradio.com, theronkellyshow.com. There's been a lot of talk, Osmond. I know I didn't mention this in the booth stuff, but there's been a lot of talk about the slavery that's going on. Lots of Facebook talk, if I could call it that, about the slavery that's going on in Africa. And I did see some of the clips where they actually showed brothers, black people, I should say, being sold, with people just like the show Storage Wars, you know, where they bid on the storage box. Well, they had, and I'm not putting, you know, making light of this, but they had there was the slaves. They were actually selling people in Libya, I believe it is. There are people who, migrants, who are running away from the tyranny, and they're being sold. Some for as little as
almost everything.
Some for almost as little as $400.
What country?
There's a video that's out right now. It's a video of men appearing to be sold at auction in Libya for $400.
Yeah, Libya. Libya was going on. It's a travesty.
Right, it's in Libya, and it shocked the world. They're saying, it's actually they're migrants. They're refugees from Somalia and some of the other places where all hell is breaking loose, and nobody's doing anything about it. And that's where a lot of these people are coming from. They're from Niger, I think. I always thought it was Niger, Chad, and some of the other places in Africa where I can't think of the name right now. The Boca Raton. No, that's a city in Florida.
Boca Haram.
Boca Haram, right. Boca Haram are wreaking havoc over there. And matter of fact, the Boca Haram, I believe, was responsible for the death of the four United States servicemen and the controversy with that, where Trump was accused the same way he said. Anyway, so there's been a lot of noise about that. And, you know, Osmond, I call it armchair activism. You know, I call it armchair activism, what's going on Facebook and Twitter and some of the other places, where people are going on Facebook, Twitter, and wherever else and exclaiming their disgust about what's going on, and then that's it. I mean, talk.
What do you do?
Well, you know, there's got to be. Well, let me just say this: 150,000 people have crossed over from Libya, from the Mediterranean Sea, from Libya, and 3,000 have died trying to make it through, and people are being sold. The people who are running away from tyranny and whatever else are being sold, and there's a lot of noise about it. But see, is that enough? I mean, just to talk about it, is that enough?
If you can't do nothing, what they want to do?
All right.
They're poor. They're hanging on to their families. They're middle class. They're not wealthy. They don't own armies. They don't have a seat at the United Nations. So they're expressing their feelings of disgust. And they're organizing people, and they're getting the word out, which in turn magnifies the issue. And then hopefully you'll get people that are in power talking about it to do something through that pressure. But, you know, people got their own lives, and they have a right to express their opinion. But I wouldn't degrade them as armchair activists just because, I don't know, would you want to protest? What do you want them to do? That's my whole thing. So there's a lot of ways to be active. And people that discount social media like Hillary did against Obama, that's why she never became president. Obama used social media. He had a team, an expert team of social media, and outflanked Hillary. And also used social media to raise more money than she did. So, I mean, this is the 21st century. And that's why you see all of the big companies. Look at Amazon. It was an internet site selling stuff over the internet. Now it's taking over the world. So to discount the internet, social media, and part of the reason why Tavis Smiley and all these guys are thrown out on their asses so quick is because it spread so quick over social media. So, you know, everybody that discounts social media and the effects and the impact and power it has do so at their own chagrin because it is a powerful force.
Well, yeah, it is, and it you know, it's not – well, yeah, but look what I – well, Amazon is a multi-billion-dollar company that arose from the internet, you know, selling things. And that was one of the things that really got the internet started in the first place with the dot-com bubble that burst a few years back, maybe a decade or so back when it was dot-everything, and a lot of those companies are not even here anymore. It's just a handful of the companies that – they were created because the internet was created to sell stuff. It wasn't created to tell, you know, for social activism or anything like that. It was created to sell stuff. That's what it was about. People were buying websites and they were selling their stuff. Facebook and Twitter and some of these other companies that are social media companies weren't even in existence back then. When the internet was first started. By Vice President Gore, the internet was built to sell things. It was a marketing tool. It wasn't social activism.
I actually know the guy who's responsible. His name is Kevin Kimberlin, and he's he actually lives up here in Connecticut. Friends of mine and a family, and he saw a guy at I believe it was UCLA. And the guy had two computers talking to each other, and he was amazed by it, communicating with each other, and then he made a big investment in it. And then, it kind of got to start. So the internet wasn't just produced for business. The internet is a living organism that was just meant to grow, just meant to bring more people together, connect people. And whether that was in business, whether that was in social communication, whether that was in journalism. So there was no intention of what the internet was ultimately going to be. They just knew that this connectivity was going to expand a lot of things in the way people live their lives, you know, through this new form of technology. So,
I have to disagree with you on that because – you know, the internet has grown into, like, look at Facebook is worth, $100 billion. And some of these other companies have made, high finance and making money is what drives a lot of these companies. Because you have, for example, you have places where there's no water. Now, that's ridiculous. Because the technology is there to bring water to areas where there is no water. We've seen how they've redirected rivers to go through certain places where there was no water. I mean, redirecting an entire river and having it pointing in another direction. They're capable of doing that, you know, but they haven't done it. They won't do it because they don't do it there's no money in it. And this is what, you know, money drives, money is really the mother of invention. But, I think that here's the thing, Osman, and I want to get to the local area because, you know, I want to get to the local area at some point. But here's the thing, you know, the reason why I say armchair quarterbacks, because, I mean, armchair quarterback, I'm thinking about the football game this weekend. The reason why I say that is because there's things going on in America that something can be done about. You don't have to travel halfway around the world to try to stop slavery in Libya. There's things going on right here in the United States of America, things that are going on around the corner. You know, in some of the areas where you could, you know, where you have the, like in some towns, you have different ethnic groups who have parades. They have their, you know, their ethnic pride parades, and you can't even get out of town. I lived in Patterson, for example, and I don't mean to beat up Patterson, but I lived in Patterson for a while, and when the Dominicans had their parades, you couldn't leave town because there were so many people, the Peruvians and people who were not necessarily Americans who are having their parades, and you can't even, you can't move, you know.
Okay.
And then when you had the African American parade, you know, there was, I mean, it was the participation was pitiful, brother. The participation was pitiful. It was absolutely an abomination. There was hardly anybody there. And it's the same thing in Montclair where I live. Montclair had a African American parade, and it was mostly the police. Like, okay, you know, it was mostly police cars and the SWAT teams, and they made them half of the parade. So, and these are things that are right here in America. They're not, you know, halfway around the world. So, what do you say to that, bro? I mean, what has happened to our pride, our civic pride?
Right. Well, me personally, I don't go to those type of parades because I want to get shot. So that's why I don't go.
Yeah, that's the other thing.
Yep. Yeah, so I don't go to those parades because, you know, anyway, most of the people I do know, like, go to the Caribbean parade up in New York. Somebody's always getting shot. And those who don't get shot, all they do is talk about the women and how they were dressed and how they were hot and how you could see everything and yada, yada, yada. But some people like that stuff. Some like to go to see the beautiful women. Some like the floats, like the culture, you know. But if people don't want to go to the parade, that's on them. But I would think that for cultural reasons and pride or whatever, that we should have more participation. So I agree with you on that. But there are some guys that's just never going to go, like me. Because, you know, for a number of reasons, I just don't even like to be around a big crowd. You know.
Well, see, and there's a lot of people, and you're right, there are lots of things to consider when you're going to a gathering of minority people. There's a lot of things to consider. I mean, and not necessarily that, because, you know, some of the recent events like Las Vegas and some of the other places where things have gone down, whether you're in the hood or whether you're in the mall, you know, you still have an equal chance of having something happen to you that, you know, you didn't leave home expecting. So I think that it's incumbent on all of us to try to, you know, we know there's not much we can do about slavery and those people who are being bought and sold and black folks who are being bought and sold and Libya, but there is something we can do about what's going on in America, you know. And somebody, you know, and I was, there was in my circle of Facebook friends, whatever you want to call them, there was a posting and somebody had got killed and nobody said anything. Nobody really said anything about that person that got killed, but they were raving and ranting about what's going on in Libya and black folks are being sold. You know, for example, we talked about the woman who was killed in Newark just a couple weeks ago, the lady who had just come in home Thanksgiving night, as a matter of fact, the woman who had got killed. And, you know, and there wasn't a whole lot of pushback about that, you know. So do
it
you
was
think-
tremendous. I, maybe not on your page. Everybody I know was upset about it, was posting about it. It really affected the city. The mayor came out and spoke about it, and then they eventually caught the bastard who did that. You know.
Right, and they catch them, but the thing is that, you know, we're upset about stuff, and then it happens again. I mean, how you know, I just think that there's a level of apathy in the black community when it comes to people being killed or robbed or whatever the case may be. Like, a lot of the robberies don't even get reported. And I think there's apathy. There's a lot of apathy in the black community when it comes to some of the violence that's perpetrated on
how they become numb to it, man. They become numb to it. It becomes a daily part of life. It becomes normal. So that type of violence ends up becoming normalized. And you got some people in Newark that haven't even been on the other side of town, yet alone other places. So, you grit it out. You grit it out. And that's one of the downfalls of being coming up in violent communities. You do become numb to it. You become desensitized to the violence itself. And so that's just how it is. And it's unfortunate. I agree with that. It's unfortunate. But the good thing is that the violence is actually down as far as the murders in Newark. This time last year, we had 27 more murders than we have this year. So shout out to Mayor Baraka for doing a great job and at least reducing it by about 25% or something like that. But it's still got 70 murders, so it's another situation. 70 murders shouldn't be normal.
So is that 70 murders what last year's total was?
Yeah, last year's total was 97 at this time. So you got 70 this time.
There'll be less.
2017.
Unless something really big happens. Yeah,
so, a lot of people are criticizing that. Yeah, the shootings are up and blah, 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 blah. But the fact is, and I posted that on Facebook today, you got 27 people that will be with their families, hopefully, this holiday. That probably, if they was in last year, wouldn't be eating with nobody. So 27 is a good progressive number. Unfortunately, there were more shootings. And one of the reasons why you had more shootings, more people shot, I should say, is because these thugs have high-powered weapons now. So they just start spraying the corner, so they hit more people because the bullets are coming out quicker, you know. But once again, it's no small feat changing the environment and the culture in inner cities, especially when you have endemic poverty. That's weighing people down, and the hopelessness. And then you got the 70% out of wedlock birth rate, 70% of the black homes. That actually, some say it's as high as 75%, and they say it's going towards 80%.
So I believe it.
A situation where 8 out of 10 black kids born are not born into a family unit where there's a mother and father. So when that kid grows up without that guidance, without that economic stability, because if you are married, at least you're combining, you know, two salaries, which makes it better and easier for that kid to have opportunities and have a decent life. So, we got these 70%, 75% single heads of households struggling. Half the daddies are in jail. Half of them across town making more babies. And then, you wonder why we have 70 murders in Newark. You wonder why we have all these shootings. It's because it's the poverty along with the ignorance. And the lack of education is just, taking people down the river, taking them down the hole. And until that changes, I don't care how many damn police you get, until that changes, you will never see a true civilized inner city neighborhood until you get the demographics where majority of people are educated, the majority of people are married, the majority of kids are going to decent, good schools. So these are some of the things that has to happen to make living amongst our own people a lot more better, a lot more cultured, a lot safer. So that's something I've been pushing for the 4 years, and you know, people don't like to hear it, but it's the damn truth.
It is the truth. We'll pick up on that on the other side of this break. We'll talk about that, and we'll talk about a couple other things before we break up out of here. It's the Ron Kelly Show, and it's on blogtalkradio.com, theronkellyshow.com.
We'll be back with more of The Ron Kelly Show after this.
Hi, I'm Amanda Pete. Like all new parents, my husband and I want what's best for our baby. When it was time for our daughter's immunizations, we wanted the facts. So we carefully researched vaccines. We spoke with doctors and other experts and asked some tough questions. We decided that vaccines were the best thing for our child. I urge you to get the facts. Learn the facts about vaccines so you can make the best healthcare decisions for your family. Thank you.
A message from the American Academy of Pediatrics and VaccinateYourBaby.org.
The Ron Kelly Show. And on the web, TheRonKellyShow.com.
Well, yes, indeed. It's the Ron Kelly Show. About 14 minutes of the program. It's the Ron Kelly Show, and it's on BlogTalkRadio.com, TheRonKellyShow.com, featuring Mr. Osman Shabazz, who has a secret show, a secret guest, and a secret star time. We don't know, but I'll keep you posted. When it comes out, we'll definitely let you know. Thank everybody again for listening to the program, Osman, because all the numbers are up and on the Ron Kelly Show, all the numbers are up and everything is green, which is a good thing because how long people listen to the show and, you know, all of that stuff is up, you know what I'm saying, which is a very good thing. So I want to thank everybody for partaking of my nonsense, the Ron Kelly Show, on blogtalkradio.com, hopefully not for much longer. So I talked a little bit in the intro, Osman, about the Democratic Party and how we black folks have supported the Democratic Party for years, so much so that they just count us in when they do their polling. Oh, we got the black vote. Oh, we got this vote. Oh, you know, the black vote has always been the vote that they could always depend on. So have we been, you know, what are your thoughts on that? And what do you think, do we continue to just blindly support the Democratic Party, or is it time for a change?
Well, the only problem with, you see, when you have one ethnic group going 94-95% for one political party, then they can't help but take you for granted. They know they don't have to do anything except for talk a certain way, and because we're emotional people, just charge the other person as being a racist, and that's it. You got black folks. You don't have to give them shit. You don't have to give them factories in their communities. You don't have to improve their schools. You don't have to give them more opportunities. You don't have to do anything but push the emotional buttons. You know, I mean, when Hillary was campaigning for the black vote, she went into a black church and started talking Ebonics. Y'all knows my feet is tired and weary, and I's gonna come back and get y'all because I love you. So, you know, I mean, this is who we've become. This is how we have projected ourselves for those in power to feel as though they could reach us by tapping into our emotions without doing anything solid. And the Republican Party has not done a good job in welcoming African Americans to the fold. So they play right into the Democrats' hand. I mean, we really look at it. We have 4 years or 8 years of Obama, and the black statistics are in the shitter, basically. More black folks lost their homes. The unemployment didn't really improve that much for black folks. A lot of things happened for women. As a matter of fact, the biggest beneficiaries of the Obama years was the gay people, the gay rights movement, and transgenders and transsexuals, and those folks. They did good because Obama fought passionately for them, but he did not fight passionately for the African Americans in this country. You know, without a doubt, he did not fight passionately, and why should he? Just the fact that he was an African and a Kenyan, an African, African and Irishman. Had a, you know, was black and had a black wife. That's all he needed. You know, the Reverend Al Sharpton said, no matter what Obama does, he's not going to criticize him. So when you had that kind of mentality, we had an opportunity for 8 years. If we'd have broke his balls a little bit, we'd have got something. But, you know, he took us for granted too. You know, and I'm going to say one thing, Ron. I remember he had his jobs tour. When he was first running for office, he went into all white neighborhoods, nice lily white suburbs. He didn't go to one inner city on his jobs tour. That's when I knew, man, that, you know, this dude is just playing a game to get elected. But nobody cares about us, brother. Nobody.
But he got, you know, we'll talk about that a little bit more too. But see, now I've heard that a lot about President Obama, that he, You know, he didn't do a lot for black people. But what have black people done for themselves? You know, why do we keep thinking that the great white hope or the great black hope or whoever it is, especially these towns like North Paterson, Irvington, some of these towns, I'm talking about northern New Jersey where I frequent, that, you know, a lot of times we listen to these council people who sell you a dream and have you thinking that, you know, that they're going to fix everything. And in these towns just stay the same. You have a shuffle, like shuffling cards, like council people come in and out, mayors come in and out, and the towns are still decimated. You know, people come in, oh, we're going to, no one person, like in the council, for example, no one person can do anything without the other eight, depending on how many council people there are. Like Patterson, for example, is a Faulkner way of doing business, Faulkner, nine council people, and the mayor, you know, and no one person is going to do anything, just like the senators and the congressmen of the United States Senate, United States Congress, and they come in saying what they're going to do, and no one person can do anything without the other 400 and something, you know, in the Senate, and the other, I mean, in 99, the other 99 in the Senate, and then the other 400 or the majority of the people in the House. So we just fall for this stuff every time there's an election. We fall for the okie doke. People tell us what they're gonna do, and then they don't do nothing because they can't do nothing. Osman, so when are we gonna start doing something?
No, it's not that. When I brought up Obama, my thing was, I would just like him to see. I wanted him to treat us just like he treated white women, just like he treated the homosexual community, just like he treated Wall Street, you know, not to do anything special for us, just to do what he's doing for everybody else in terms of helping them out, looking out for their interests and giving them up a hand. Those black folks stood in line, some of them for 12 hours, 9 hours, 10 hours. They were crying. You know, it was making history, and they voted in numbers like they never voted before. And for the African-American community to basically be ignored for the past 8 years when he was in office, it's a shame. But, again, we allow our emotionalisms to rule us, you know, and that everybody knows that. Everybody knows that. So until we stand up and look at things in a rational way, then we're gonna get played. As simple as that. But
yeah, we have been getting played.
All of it ties in to our communities, everything, our schools, our family situations, everything ties in. Until we get our act together, people are going to continue to take us for advantage and exploit our emotionalism.
Because look at Trump. Trump said, well, you know, there were some black folks that fell for the okie doke with Trump. God only knows why. When Trump said, you know, what do you got to lose? I mean, what the hell are you talking about? What do I have to lose? I got nothing to lose by voting for you. I got everything to lose by voting for you. That's why I didn't vote for you. Because you see what happened. He hasn't said word one about the black community, not one word. And this is a man who twice turned down the opportunity to address the NAACP twice. I mean, I give George Bush credit because at least he went, you know, so I give him a little bit of credit. He went. He didn't do nothing for us either, but at least he went. You know, Clinton went, you know, but when Trump had an opportunity to go both times, both conventions, once when he was running and the second time after he became president, he didn't want to go to the NAACP convention. So what the hell do you think he was going to do for us? But we keep falling for, we keep looking for the great white hope, the great black hope. Somebody's going to come in and fix up the community. Somebody's going to come in and build. Somebody's going to come in and hand out a whole bunch of jobs. Somebody's going to come and rebuild the school. Somebody's going to get the people from in front of the liquor store. Somebody's going to stop everybody from getting high. And somebody's going to stop the 80% single mother birth rate in the black community. Somebody's supposed to come and fix all of that. And we have this mentality that somebody's supposed to come in and fix everything for us. And nobody's coming. Nobody's coming.
That's for sure.
Nobody's coming.
Power concedes nothing without a demand, and never have and never will. And we have to do things ourselves, but also we're taxpayers. There are billions of dollars going to other communities and building military equipment and going all over the place, even subsidizing foreign countries, $15,000 per citizen, like in some of our allies, for instance. So there's nothing wrong with African Americans expecting some type of assistance from government. But for the most part, it is up to us to rebuild our communities. You know, just more black folks getting married will cut the poverty numbers down dramatically. So there's a lot of things we have to do to help ourselves. But by the same token, we can't let politicians and government off the hook to not treat us just like they treat every other community in America.
Let's say they gave out, for example, they gave out reparations. You know, Lexus and, you know, some of these other companies would stock would go through the roof. Let's say they had a, they gave out reparations, maybe $50,000, $100,000 a piece to every black person in America. Well, I think that as far as reparations goes, to do it fair, you should, everybody who was born before the Civil Rights Act was enacted should get it. Everybody else gets nothing. You know, that would be a fair way to do it. If you were born before 1964 or before the Civil Rights Act was enacted, then you get reparations. If you were born after that, you get nothing.
Wrap my mind on that subject. I don't even get into it because it's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen. I don't get into it either.
More stuff. You know, it is, you know, we were brutally treated and it was horrible, but you're just wasting your time screwing around with the whole the reparations thing. And I just don't have time for it, man. I got to feed my family and put my kids through school and take care of my bills and try to live a decent life. But, it's just not going to happen. And
no, of course it's not going to happen. No, but we have to.
I just want to focus, keep my eye on the prize.
I hate you because you got to do your own thing. You got to put your own thing together. And we got to stop standing around waiting for somebody to come save us. We got to stop. You know, I want to say real quick before we get out of here. Though, there's a street. I grew up in Jersey City, New Jersey, not far away from where I am right now. And there's a street in Jersey City, Newark Avenue that stretches from Tunley Avenue to Kennedy Boulevard. I'd say it's about maybe like a mile. And there's nothing but Indian stores. Everything that you could want. Indian everything. It's all Indian businesses for like a mile. I think it's around about a mile. And you have little India, you got little Italy, you have little China, like Palisades Park, New Jersey, and some other places where there's an overabundance of Asian Americans living there, Asians, you know, green cards, whatever the case may be. But when you come in the black community, it's like little Vietnam. You know what I mean? For the most part, unless you're well-to-do. You know what I mean? Unless you're well-to-do. It's like a war zone. And it's something we have to do something about that. You know, I think we need to get it together and stop waiting for the great white hope or the great black hope or whoever it is what's coming to save us, because ain't nobody coming to save us, brother. You know, we got to save ourselves. Like you said, you got to feed your family. You got to go to work. You got to do your business.
It's a simple blueprint, man, and white folks don't escape it either. Everybody that wants to, you know, be stable and progressive in America go through the same thing. You know, stay out of trouble. Stay away from crime. Go to school. Take your education seriously. Get a trade, some type of skill, or go to college, graduate, get a job, get a career of your choice.
Right.
Work hard, hopefully meet a woman, marry her, and build a family. That's how you got to do it. And white folks got to do it that way too. And everybody else think they're going to get around that and still be successful. It's far and few between, and that's it.
That's it, my brother. All right, everybody, we got about 30 seconds up to the program. If you just came in at the tail end or if you couldn't listen to the whole program, you go to blogtalkradio.com/The Ron Kelly Show, and you can check me and Brother Osman out in this show and any of the other 100-and-something shows that are there as well, The Ron Kelly Show, featuring Osman Shabazz. All right,
everybody,
10 seconds.
Sir.
All right, Brother Osman, thank you, brother. And we'll see you back here next time.
No problem, my pleasure.
All right, thank you. Thank you, brother. All right, everybody, we'll see you back here next week. And until then, be safe, everybody.